Hello, Yes But Why listeners. This is your host, Amy Jordan. Welcome to episode 204 of Yes But Why podcast, featuring Sarah Rhea Warner, host and star of the popular audio drama podcast, Girl in Space. But first, let's talk about our sponsor. This episode of Yes But Why podcast is sponsored by Audible. You can get your free audiobook download and your 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. Our guest this week hosts the Write Now podcast, all about writing. And Audible has hundreds of titles on the subject. Do you want to learn to write a memoir or maybe a song? Audible has something for you. Audible is available for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Download your free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. So this week's guest is speaker and podcaster Sarah Warner. Sarah was just an absolute delight throughout our entire conversation. I was honored that she agreed to be my guest. She's a big deal in podcasting. I couldn't believe she said yes. You can support Sarah by listening to her shows, the Write Now podcast for writers and the sci-fi audio drama Girl in Space. I now present to you Yes But Why, episode 204, Sarah Rhea Warner and Flinging Yourself Down Your Own Creative Staircase. Amy Jordan, and this is Yes But Why podcast. Yeah. What is the first moment in your life when you did something creative and you knew, like, oh, this is my thing. This is my jam. I like this.
Ooh, oh, I love that question. Oh my gosh. Okay. So is it weird if I like have an answer already? I'm like,
no.
Immediately. Okay. I'm
not usually. Why would that be
usually
weird?
It takes me a while. like weird in my own context. Like I'm just not used to having answers ready, but like this time I have one for you and I'm really excited about it.
I'm so glad. So, tell me.
Well, thank you. So I was in first grade. And for whatever reason, I was like writing a book like you do. And it was on newsprint, the 8.5 by 11. And it I was using crayons and there was some sort of rubric we were supposed to be following. I don't know if I was following it or not. I just liked making things. And I remember turning the pages in my book and I was writing, I think, a fairy tale. And I just remember this overwhelming sense of power that came over me when I realized that I had a choice with what happened in this story. So to back up for just a second, I grew up in a very strict household. You know, there was no TV watching. There was no being out of the house after a certain time in the evening. There were no like friends allowed over or anything like that. But when I was writing this story in my first grade classroom, I remember just swelling with excitement. Like I can have literally anything happen. And of course, what I chose as a first grader was having two crocodiles fight in a river of blood like you do.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, as the princess looked on in fascination and disgust. But it was just such a powerful moment. And that has always stuck with me, that no matter what my circumstances are, I always have the choice to create what I want to see in the world.
Yeah. Wow.
You know, like two crocodiles fighting in a river of blood.
Sure. Absolutely. I think that one makes total sense. That one's like classic right there. Like, and the teachers look at that and they're like, mm-hmm, makes sense for sure.
Yeah. Like, obviously, what else would you do?
Can you imagine how many insane stories like that teacher saw over the years, like the crazy things? And then she has to be like, oh, okay, great. And then his head explodes and blood goes everywhere. Okay, excellent, children. Next one. Like, ooh.
Good job, children. Very normal. Very good. Yes.
You guys are so creative. It's okay. I mean, I'm into it. That's fine. I'd rather kids get it out and making tiny little books and having a fun time with crocodiles and their imagination. If they can get it out that way, I feel like it's probably better.
Yeah, it's healthy, right? Healthy. Yeah. Healthy is the word.
So speaking of healthy, you mentioned you're a strict household. Was the power that you sought to have over your characters or found that you had over your characters something you didn't have a lot of at home because they restricted a lot of the stuff you had to do?
Yeah. And it was just, you never realize that you're free in your own imagination, or at least I didn't. For me, that was something that I had to realize. And it was, I don't necessarily know if I was like looking for, you know, power or whatever. I'm not generally a very power hungry person, but it was just so interesting and fascinating to realize that there were places in my life where I couldn't be controlled, where I had the final say in what I thought and did. And that was just absolutely liberating for me. And it's something that I've kind of clung to even as an adult in lesser situations. So, I'm self-employed now, but you know, back in my corporate office days, like realizing, oh, I can just daydream through this meeting and nobody will know. And that's cool. Like I have the power over what I do. So, I don't know. It's stuck with me throughout my entire career and I've ended up making a career out of it.
It's funny because even just like listening to you talk about how you're like, yeah, I have the power to daydream during this meeting. I actually feel like a lot of people don't think they have that power. Not that they don't have the ability to do it. Sure, they can do whatever a human body does, but like they feel like, well, I have to stay totally focused in this meeting, so I can't think about anything else right now. I have to do this one thing. And I feel like you're probably right that you should allow yourself the sort of like leeway of being able to do what you need to do in the moment, like make choices for yourself personally. Like if you're like, yeah, I know everything they're going to say in this meeting because I'm the one who wrote the script for this meeting. And right now I really just can't wait to go to the bar after and get the fish and chips that I'm dreaming about. So I'm going to think about that instead. Whatever thing it is that you need to kind of get yourself through. Sometimes I wonder if the anxiety that so many people feel, and I don't mean to downplay any actual mental illness, but really just sort of like general anxiousness in the sort of like overdriven, too intense power world that we live in. You know, they don't give themselves the ability to dream, to relax, to like enjoy their own life and create worlds in their own heads.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know if it's because we're not told that. I don't know if it's because, you know, obviously, you know, we're trained not to do that. We're trained to sit up straight, pay attention, because we're all essentially being trained through school to be little factory workers and to be productive cogs in the societal machine. But it's, I don't know, you're always free. You're always freer than you think you are in your own mind. And that's just been something that's been really grounding for me, sort of ironically.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, you know, kind of, we're talking about the imagination and being able to tap into it. And I think you're right. I don't think a lot of people can tap into it. I mean, I can tell you, I have taught my fair share of people who, when I'm teaching like level one improv to them, they say things to me like, oh, I don't know how to act emotions because like, I don't feel emotions. I'm like, what?
Whoa.
You wait, no. You feel emotions. Literally by saying that sentence to me, you're showing me you're feeling emotions. One of them right now, fear. And like, you know, so it's like people hold themselves back entirely. You're like, no, just be you. Like, so I've actually since having students like that, I've like changed my tack at approaching talking about how to act and how to do the emotions, because people really like get scared about a certain like idea of them playing, you know. Mm-hmm. And similar to you as a child writing this story, you know, just accessing your imagination and like allowing yourself to do it, there are some adults that like have never done it, didn't do it when they were a kid, and definitely don't do it as adults. So it's just a super interesting sort of like idea. Quite a
right. How do you think, like, how do you think that that affects our lives and the way we live? Do you think that imagination is tied to potential, or?
I feel like imagination is tied to the sort of strength to get through the harder times. The ability to weave a story is what gets me through the low points, because I can see that I've had a low point before. I've had an episode of my life that was sad like this before. And what happened after that one? Oh, well, it looks like things turned up and things were all right. You figured it out and it was totally fine. So that's what's going to happen now. So that's how I like my imagination for me. It's like I can imagine every possibility. I can go through. I even truly, truly believe it like saves me from like indiscretions of like, you know, when people like get, you know, when people get antsy in life and they like go out and steal something or like they, you know, something's going on in their lives and they're feeling sad about themselves. So they like go cheat on their spouse or whatever. I'm not doing that. Now, no, don't get me wrong. I've done a lot of weird things before I got married. So I was like, it's fine. Don't worry. You've done it. Cross it off the list. But, you know, having the imagination to just be like, okay, but instead of doing it, let's just think about it for a second. It'll be much nicer. And then you don't have to talk to that guy again. Like, oh, okay, cool. That seems nice. Oh, and he's gone. Whew. All right. Great. Super wonderful. Like, I just feel like having the ability to like imagine different things or like for instance, people who are like in 12-step programs, there's a thing, and I use this for myself so much to like stop myself like again from making bad decisions. There's a phrase, play the tape. And it's like for people in substance abuse groups, they're trying to remind themselves like, remember the last time you made this choice to take this drink? Remember what happens after that. And then they like imagine the terrible things they did the last time. So they're like, nope. So the idea is play the tape. Don't like pause it at the fun times and be like, but it's gonna be fun. It's like play the tape to the end and see really what does happen. So I always think about that. I imagine like full lives, you know what I mean? Just like, what if this? And I like let myself imagine like a whole total other existence, you know, like during the day, I like glance on Zillow at like a new house and like imagine my whole life inside that house and like what it would be like and what the school would be like and my neighbor, we'd get along and I'd make cookies all the time for some reason. Like just different things to like make me, you know, just think of fun little stories. I feel like it keeps me entertained and keeps me feeling like I'm alive in the moments when I could potentially be like, this life thing is tough and long and boring. Because it kind of is. I don't know. What do you think?
I like that. No, I love that. It's almost, you know, presenting imagination as like a survival skill, as something that's necessary for making good choices and living a healthier life. I love that. And I've never heard the whole play the tape thing, but you're absolutely right. Constructing those narratives is how we learn and grow. Oh my gosh, this is all really fascinating to me. And I love it just because we tend to treat imagination as something so extraneous and as something so separate from living a practical, healthy life, that I love any idea that makes it, that turns it on its head and makes it essential like that.
I have a feeling that my family upbringing was different than yours, and every time I talk to a new person it's like brand new, like, oh wait, your mom didn't do this weird thing, wait, you didn't hold picket signs at like in front of stores that didn't unionize, oh I don't understand. And when I was like 6 years old, my mom had a little like she had a need for an after school program for me. And so she like assigned me or got me a teacher who essentially just did plays with me in the afternoons. Like while I waited for her to get out of work, me and this like young girl who I was just thinking about the other day, Miss Blackwell, who knows what her name is now, or even what her first name was. But, you know, we used to do plays in the afternoon, and it was like such a huge part of my life to do this. And after that, I did that with everything. Like, I was just making plays and creating shows, and like, that's pretty much what I do now. Like, I think of every new project I do as just a different show that I'm doing, whether it's a podcast or a play or like I'm hosting an event or anything at all. It's all just shows. And, yeah. You know, with a different kind of audience that I have to talk to differently, you know. But my family clearly was super open to this idea of it. So I wonder, you know, like you're saying, if you don't have access to this imagination, if nobody tells you like, hey, you should live your life being using your imagination all the time, and like you should try to put stories together, and like storytelling is like the ancient art of us trying to figure out life. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I think it's interesting too. I liked what you said earlier about working with improv students who are maybe feeling some intense fear. And I think that a lot of what blocks us from accessing that is, I don't know if it's fear, ignorance, or if fear and ignorance are related in any way, but I think sometimes we even are afraid to access it because we're afraid of what's there, what we might discover. Because I also work with writers who are maybe sometimes hesitant to sort of give fully over to their imaginations. And it's just such an interesting experience to try to coach them into it and to try to let them get a little bit closer to what I see as something that's very, very freeing and very positive.
Something that's helped with my improv background as well is the idea of like that every idea could work. Like in improv, there's no wrong move. Like it's just what's happening. Like there's no like, oh, you should have done this. Like sometimes I'll be like, I thought you were going to do that. I thought you were going to do this, but you made this choice and we totally went down this other road. Super interesting. Like there's no point where, in fact, it like the number one rule is like at no point you can be like, hey, guys, this is too complicated. Instead of it being these two guys robbing the bank and it should be me robbing the bank alone. It's like, whoa, hey, what's happening right now? Like if the scene's not working, get out of the scene. But, you know, living in this moment of like whatever happens, happens. It also, when I started doing sketch writing, and that was more like you have to write a script and someone has to memorize the script. So at a certain point, you have to let it go and say, this is the finished product that you need to memorize. And you have to give them, people don't memorize great, number one thing. you got to, you know, give them like a week or two to with that final script. So you have to decide, this is it. This is the funniest moment. This is all I've got. And I'm often like, you can't be precious with your work. You have no idea what's going to happen. You don't know if everyone's going to love it or hate it. The room, we as the writers could love it. And then the audience is like, I don't get it. I can't tell you the number of times I did a sketch show for 7 years. I can't tell you the number of bits that the like whole writers group was all like, oh yeah, this one's amazing. Everyone's going to die laughing. And then we do it to like crickets. I'm like, what?
Oh no.
How do they?
Oh no.
Why is it? Well, no, I mean, everything's a lesson, right? So,
yeah. So
you know, you got to try it out and see how it goes. And it doesn't kill you for there to be crickets when you thought. It just helps you learn, right? It helps you learn that the group of people who are all friends, who are creating stuff together, maybe have a tone of jokes that is very inside joke. And that doesn't allow so much for an audience to be in on said inside joke, right? And like, how unfun is it at a party when you see like three friends and they're like, remember Cancun in 98? And they're like, the waiter? And then you're like, cool, awesome, I'm here too. Like they're, okay. Yeah. You know what I mean? So everything's a lesson. Even the bad stuff, even it doesn't work out is totally good. You're 100% right. That's the hardest part about all of the creative arts, is it's not just imagination for the purpose of like making good things. It's imagination for all the things, even the bad things. You know what's crazy about my imagination? So I think that when you do improv, you really exercise your imagination, because you have to come up with new ideas all the time. And then you need to throw them away immediately and go come up with new ones. So your brain becomes very attuned at like just 27 ideas. Like I can rattle off like thousands of different like possible scene ideas at any time, purely just because my brain's always thinking of them. But when I had the baby, my brain was like, I'm going to use your imagination now to imagine every possible terrible thing that could happen to this child. I'm going to do it. Watch. And I'd be like, no. Why? There'd be so many of them. I didn't know my imagination was so good at its job, that it could come up with so many crazy possible things. And I'd say to that brain, hey, you know, that's not even possible. That's like a thing that happened in a movie one time and they debunked it on Mythbusters. You know it. And my brain's like, who cares? You're watching it, aren't you? Like, why? Like, so, you know, imagination, good for you, sometimes bad for you. Just throwing that out.
That's very true. I really appreciate that perspective.
So you found your excitement in your storytelling and imagination early on, but you didn't have you always been writing since then? Because it hasn't always been your full-time job. That's a sort of recent development. It's but have you always done writing on your own at home and created projects for yourself?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Like, it's interesting. So like reading and writing are really closely intertwined. And writing has been, where I go, like I said, to find freedom, because, you know, so much of life is, or has been for me, like very constricted. And so that was true, growing up. That was less true when I went to college and I was like, oh, I can make decisions on my own and this is great. And then after 4 years of like, oh, I can do this and I can do this and I can decide whether or not I succeed here. Then I entered the workforce. And so I was an English and poetry major. And so, of course, I went into software. And
sure, just, the poetry of the century.
So, yeah. Oh, gosh. And so I was doing like software license stuff and data entry, and it was just literally the worst. And so I would go home in the evenings and just have this like angry storm of creative energy that I would need to release somehow. And so I was blogging, I was writing fantasy, I was doing all sorts of things. I had a couple novels going, but it was just this need to create. And I don't know if it stemmed from feeling trapped or frustration or, you know, just the need to keep making use of my imagination, but it was an all-consuming thing. And interestingly, I started, I don't know, I'd say interestingly, I don't know if this is actually interesting, but I started working in marketing after I left my software company job. And I worked in marketing at a bank for 5 years, and then I worked at a marketing agency for 5 more years. And while I was at the bank, I was doing things like, I was doing technical writing for the first time. And that was a shift for me, because again, this is going to be coming from like my own bias. I don't love technical writing. I was like, oh, I'm writing, which is the thing I love to do, but I'm writing like Regulation D letters to people, you know, who aren't using their bank accounts properly, and it makes me want to cry. And so I was like, I love writing, but I hate what I'm writing. And it really forced me to discover that it's not the writing that I love. It's the creating. It's the imagination. It's the freedom. It's the sense of weaving together a story. It's not the writing itself that I love. So that was an important lesson to learn.
Well, you know, it makes me think of what a lot of people will say in, you know, sort of my neck of the theater woods, which is like, when you do the thing that you love to do for money, it changes it in a way. Mm-hmm. Like if you're, especially if it's not on your own terms, like you write a book, mm-hmm. and then they give you money for it. Great. You know, whatever. That's just cake. But like, if you're writing somebody else's thing, or if you're writing, you know, whatever it is, it might not give you the same kind of joy because now it's a job as opposed to like something that you're doing to vent your frustration or as a calling or because the story, mm-hmm. is in your brain and you have to get it out somehow, which is also why I was mad at my imagination for doing all sorts of like, you know, baby death fantasies. I was like, hey, I need your help. Don't do this. You're going to wear yourself out. Because it's true, if you use this skill, you know, to do something else, then you can't use it later for yourself, right? If you're doing all this technical writing and you have to write all this stuff, you're not going to be like, sweet, now I'm going to go home and sit at a different computer and type in a new and different way. Like, nope, it's the same and your body needs to move in a different way. So you're going to go do something else now. Like, and so that's why I think it's hard, you know, for a lot of people to turn their passion into a job. And that happens, I think, a lot now, like in the gig economy that we live in. Like so many people have to like freelance everything. Like it's like, it used to be super funsy for Louise to make these bracelets, but now she has to make like 100 a week or else she won't make her rent. Like, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh my gosh. Yes.
I mean, plus, I can't even imagine the sort of breakneck speed that has happened to you. I mean, you started out creating, I'm sure creating a bunch of things, but putting together your first podcast that like blew up. And like, that is unexpected, right? I mean, I can't imagine you were like, when you put it out, you were like, this one's gold. Like, you know, it's tough to figure out. And then you have to navigate that. And then people are like, clearly, people like me are like, clearly you have nothing else to do, so you should do an interview with me. And you're talking to a million people all over the place, using up your precious, like, you know, thinking ability and imagination and like talking skills to appease people like me and do conferences and all sorts of other stuff. And I read your bio. I know you're an introvert. How do you do it?
What an excellent question.
Sorry, so long.
I just, you know, the way I live my life is I'm at the top of a staircase and I just sort of fling myself down it. Like that's kind of how I live day to day. Every day it's a new staircase and every day I just happily fling myself down. You know, I like what you said earlier about us learning through stories. I love the play the tape example because I know that I've gotten here by doing those things. And it's so interesting when we talk about conserving energy and using energy for projects, for creative work, for speaking with other people. I used a lot of my creative energy creating Girl in Space, which is my sci-fi podcast that kind of blew up. But when I was making it, it was an experiment. I did not think that it would be successful. And in fact, I was just like, this will be my little test project before, you know, I try out fictional podcasting in a way that I really think will be successful. So Girl in Space was my little sandbox that I was playing in, and I didn't think that it would blow up. And so then by the time that I sort of got through creating that, I had also been on, you know, several panels and I had done some speaking gigs and I'd been a guest on podcasts. And I noticed that that's how I got Girl in Space to grow was by connecting with people and interfacing with people, and building a community and being present in a community. And so I really sort of had to learn that the two things are connected. And it was really hard because, like you said, I'm an introvert, and there's nothing I love more than just like hiding in my office and not talking to anyone all day. But if you want to be successful in a certain way, you know, you kind of have to learn how to do those things. And so it becomes this delicate dance of expending and absorbing and regenerating energy. And hence the staircase example, I'm not really good at it yet. So like every day I'm still like, well, I've used all of my energy. I'm lying broken at the bottom of the staircase. And tomorrow I'll do it all over again. And so I don't know if I'm necessarily looking for a way for that not to be my life, because, you know, it's meaningful and I enjoy it. And I've found the success that I want to have. I just wish I was less exhausted all the time.
Sure. I'm sure someone will offer you some sort of herbal remedy that, you know, elderberry that you can take, and it'll just fix it right up. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So after you're doing all of your projects, like when you speak to people and you do all your things, are you also spending each day putting more effort into your own creative projects? Like, or is that the bulk of your day? Like, how are you dividing up your time these days, or is it day to day?
In a way, it's day to day. I mean, I sort of have a rubric for, I'm not a very organized person. We'll just say that. if I were, I would be like, oh yes, I write from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. for Girl in Space, and then I have tea, and then I do it. No, every day is different, but nice. I still have the same sort of like buffet of options. So I put time and energy into creating fictional shows. I put time and energy into teaching. So I have, I do a lot of teaching for writers and podcasters. And so that takes a significant amount of each day. I do live streams once a week. I do email newsletters. I do, I don't know. I do a lot of social media stuff. I'm like sitting here like racking my brain. Like, what do I do all day?
That feels like a lot of work, though. That feels like a to-do list that I'd probably put off till the next day, to be honest with
yeah,
you.
Yeah, no. And like, and since, and so I'm self-employed and I don't have my own team. So, you know, really, I'm also doing my finances. I'm paying state taxes. I'm figuring out when my quarterly taxes are due. I'm, you know, filing my receipts and doing Schedule Cs and like whatever.
Oh, wow. You're so good at taxes. I have a CPA who I hand a pile of stuff to and go, I'm sorry, every year.
I need that. I need to stop doing everything by myself. So you're very smart for doing that.
Oh, it's like 2 years in the making. I'm not. Believe me. It was like I turned 40 and I was like, you know what? There's a person whose job it is to do this. Let's give it to them. I like supporting small business.
Well, because what are you, at the end of the day, what are you expending your energy on? It's like, oh, I'm spending energy on doing tax stuff when that energy could have gone to, you know, outlining this next episode or recording an episode of the Right Now podcast or engaging with a community in this meaningful way. And I don't know. So there's something to be said for being aware of what different tasks take out of you and what really fills you back up. And what you just really shouldn't be doing at all in the first place.
Man, you know, that sounds like a deep life lesson. Like, I don't think I've learned that one yet. Like, I'm very much a just give it to me, I'll do it kind of situation for sure. Like,
me too. Yeah. And it's not good for me.
Well, I mean, it's kind of good for you. It's working for now, but in order for you to grow, it's not going to work for you. I mean, right. But I mean, as only, of right now, you're yeah. doing it.
Well, thank you. There's only so many times I can throw myself down that staircase, though, like before I don't get up again. So
I don't know if that's true, but you know, A, you're young yet, and B, I mean, there's a lot of staircases in the world, and it, you know, maybe it's not so bad. you know, I mean, it's funny. I've never thought of that particular metaphor, but now I'm like, that's exactly what motherhood is. Like when I set an alarm for every day at 7 a.m. because my body's like, why would I get up then? But I have to, because my human child is usually awake by then, usually already awake. So like when I'm awake, waking up, I can hear him like, nom, 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 nom. Who knows what time he got up? I mean, he just entertains himself. Right. And I swing in there like with a coffee, like, what's up? How's it going? And he goes, hi, how are you? Every morning. And, you know, that's great, but I feel like every time, and like I sit in a pile of guilt for the first 2 hours as I'm making him breakfast and think like, okay, you need to do something for this child. Like he needs a proper childhood. Bring him to a park. Oh, that means I have to put clothes on. Okay, go to a park. You're going to be in the sun. The sun's good for you. Ah, the sun. I lost my sunglasses. Like, it's just constantly, like, every minute of, like, I should be doing this. No, I don't want to do it. Oh, I should be doing this. So I feel like it's, you know, we're all throwing ourselves down the stairs trying to get the work done for sure. And it's really just a matter of, like, are you getting to the end and you're like, yeah, I did it. You know, like like the guys in, like the guy, what's that show? The Jackass, where they like throw themselves into things and then at the end everyone's really excited. That's what life is.
Yeah. One big episode of Jackass.
It really, I mean, like I didn't mean it as like a full life metaphor, but it really fits. I'm like, really, really.
It worked.
So intensely. It's like, it's all insanity like that. It's also that for anything. Like, you could explain anything. You're like, taxes? Have you seen the show Jackass? That's it. What? Yep. They just throw regulations at each other and go like, that's a law now. Like, oh, God. Oh, funny. So you are trying to juggle it as best you can while falling down the staircase, you know, holding a bowl of fruit. I dig it.
Yeah. Yeah, you just have to land on the fruit so that it, you know, cushions your fall.
Have there been any experiences that you've had at like a convention or talking to a fan or something like that that, you know, kind of inspired you or propelled you forward when you were having a tough time? I know that's a weird, obscure question.
No, that's a wonderful, wonderful question. I remember when I first started the Right Now podcast in 2014 or 2015, and I wasn't reaching a huge audience. It was kind of frustrating. I was putting all this time and energy into this thing, and I was still doing it because I needed to do it. Like, I needed to be creating something. But I was like, nobody's really listening. And then I got an email from this, from an older woman who she was retired and her husband had passed away several years before. And she wrote to me that she was listening to my podcast, which like in itself was amazing because like, you know, sometimes older people have difficulty like finding and listening to podcasts. And so I was like, oh my gosh, you're amazing. But she was listening to my podcast and using it as inspiration to write poetry about her deceased husband. And she was like, thank you for doing this podcast. I've really started thinking about my husband and I've been writing these poems about him and I wouldn't have done this without your show. And that was when I kind of realized like, this is heavy. Like, oh my gosh, the impact that we can have on other people. And like, we don't always know necessarily, like this is one woman that decided to write to me and tell me that she was writing poetry inspired by my podcast to like process her husband's death. But, you know, who else am I helping? And it was just this really, really like beautiful realization that just because we don't know the effect that we're having doesn't mean that we're not having that effect on people. And so it's just really important to keep going, even though you maybe feel like you're not seen or heard in the way that you want to be. Because, I mean, ultimately, that's just ego. Like, that's just us wanting to be validated. But doing it anyway has been, I don't know, really important to me ever since.
That's really amazing. I think you're right that we don't see ourselves and the work that we do in the same way that other people do. And it is always so nice. Like, I wish there was a way that, like, once a month I could just, like, get a bunch of people to say nice things about me. I'd be like, oh, you're right. Okay, cool. Okay. You know, it, like, just helps to, like, hear those things as opposed to, like, you know, any sort of, like, negative, because I got plenty of that in my own brain to figure out that kind of thing. Also, I have met in my life, like, I've met lots of different, like, people that make theater or make film and stuff like that. People who, you know, I've met a few of my heroes, and it is always wild to me when I meet somebody and they're just like, oh, yeah, I did that. Cool. I'm glad you liked it. Yeah, it was weird for me. I didn't love it. Like, and it's like, you know, it'll be like the book that I was like, are you kidding me? It's the best book in the world. Or like, that's my favorite movie. What do you mean? Like, people just think of themselves like schmoes no matter who they are, right? Yeah. They just think of themselves as like, you know, whoever. And they just, you know, nobody thinks of themselves the way you do. Like, when you idolize somebody or when you, like, are really excited, like, I'm excited for everyone who wants to have a good time. And I've definitely met people who, like, I thought were amazing actors. And then when I talked to them, they were so, like, nonplussed about the whole thing that I was like, oh, well, they're out. Because they, like, just don't care. You know, like, in my mind, I'd rather nobody know your name, but you're in, like, you know, you're working on stuff and you, like, really love it than be like Brad Pitt and hate your life. Not that Brad Pitt hates his life. I don't think he does. But, which I only just found out recently from a podcast he was on, and I heard him and I was like, oh, he seems okay. But you know what I mean? Like people, some people have weird attitude, you know? You know, speaking of,
I wonder if it's because they're coming to this, like, with the context that they're coming to it with. It's, you know, if something is like their day to day, if it's been normalized for them, that context that they come to it with is just so radically different from us, where our context is, we're viewing this finished product. We don't know the flaws behind it. We don't know the, like, scandals behind it or the things that went wrong behind the scenes. All we see is this elevated project that speaks truths to us because it's been polished. It's been gone over by editors, and we're not in, like, the gross day-to-day drudgery of it, which is really fascinating. And I wish there was a way that, like, we could, like, share and universalize that context, because I think it would erase a lot of the mystery in a bad way. It would erase a lot of the non-transparency around creative works and really kind of just open up, I don't know, a better future for creators.
You know, I wonder if I understand what you mean. I wonder if people with, like, VR technology can help us to understand different people's points of views, like, to the point where it's like, you know, if you're, you know, what is it like to be, well, okay, here's something that's crazy, and I don't know if this has happened to you or what the context of ever you sort of acting or performing or anything has ever been, but
yeah,
if you're doing, like, any sort of acting, a commercial or you're in a movie or whatever, when you're the quote unquote talent, meaning the actor, they talk to you in a different way than they talk to other people. they talk to you really sweetly and they give you a lot of compliments all the time. And I'm always like, hey, you don't have to do that. It's fine. Like, we're cool. Let's just do the job. And they're like, thank you so much. You're really great. Your hair looks amazing. Can I just sell you that sweater? I mean, it really brings out your ass. I'm like, okay, you can stop. Stop, stop, stop. Let's just go. Where are we getting the photos taken? And they're like, oh, you're so smart. Absolutely. We should go there. I'm like, stop, stop, stop. Like, and I, every time it happens, I think this is what like PAs and people are being taught how to act. Imagine being Brad Pitt and every single day of your life, people are like, oh my God, you're really amazing. Here is this muffin. I can't believe you can even eat muffins because you're so thin and so svelte. I can't, you're so beautiful. I mean, what, you're 54? Like, that's crazy. Your hair, oh, it looks so gorgeous. The way you say words, oh, it's just amazing. Like, they can't even, like, whenever people are like, oh, they're egotistical, I'm like, they cannot help it. People are putting this in their brains. So it's like, do some VR with like the praise George Clooney receives every day. And you'd be like, yeah, you know what? I am pretty great. You know, or any person where you're like, that guy's delusional. Okay, cool. See a moment in that guy's like afternoon where like everybody's like, yes, sir, you're the best, sir. What do you think? Yes or no? And he's like, what's the situation? And they're like, it doesn't matter. Just say one of them. And he's like, yes. And they're like, great. That's wonderful. Okay, you're the sweetest. See you later. And they're like, terrible CEO makes terrible decisions. And you're like, what? I thought it was about coffee. Like,
right.
You know, you never know. And I hope that there could be a way so that we could see each other's point of views, if only just to create sort of empathy. Like,
right. It
brings me back to the imagination conversation we're having up top, which is like, because I keep thinking about this idea where it's like, it's not just like, if you allow yourself to use the imagination, then there's also like the, how much you've seen in your life, imagination help the world, right? So if you live in a particularly poor upbringing where like your parents probably have to work multiple jobs and like they're not happy about it, so every time you see them, they're kind of like, ugh, because they're exhausted from whatever two jobs that they're doing that are also probably the kind of jobs where people are mean to them all the time. Like, that doesn't allow for much in the way of feeling good about yourself. And feeling good about yourself, I think, is part and parcel to allowing your brain to explore. And a lot of times when things get hard, people shut off that part and say, I can't dream anymore because I don't have the money to dream. I don't have the time to dream. I'm not the kind of person who gets a dream. And it's like, whoa, like too much. I think everyone deserves it. Everyone can have it. But I know what it's like to get to a point where you're like, the only thought in my head is when can I pay rent? So I can't do anything else. Like by creating this or doing that, you know, like I have to find another job right now. You know, the sort of situations that so many people are actually dealing with and how they even raise up to the point of allowing themselves to be creative, to give themselves the time to say, what are the stories in my brain? And in fact, I think it's so much more important for people in certain positions like that to tell stories, because we don't have that many stories out there that describe what that's like or what it feels like. And those stories are what help us create empathy so we can go, man, that does not sound fun. That feels like a terrible situation I don't want people to get involved in. And how can I help that? And then people can make changes in whatever way that they can in their lives or politics or whatever. You know, like, but until you understand other people, then, you know, I feel like I've gone down on a tangent, but I'm going to throw it back to you.
No, this is beautiful. I love it. I love this. I feel like I'm hearing your upbringing with the picket signs. Like it's this is fantastic.
Oh, well, I mean, I don't know about you. It sounds like you need an assistant, first of all. but I am totally in like a new creative renaissance for myself. So I'm open to whatever. And every time I have these conversations with people, I really just like to sort of dig deep into concepts of like why we do it and how we maintain it. Because I mean, to be totally honest, I have had a heck of a rut. I mean, since having the baby, there's just so much time spent on like staring at this other human and like making sure everything's okay. And then once that's like clear that they're fine, they're crazy and want to run around and jump everywhere. And you're like, oh, there's a lot of that, you know? Yeah. So, you know, there's so much energy spent with that. My child is now 2. So he just screams in my face sometimes, just like no cool. and mine. And the energy that gets sucked out of me as I'm like, uh-huh, cool, great, it is yours, is like so intense that sometimes I like cannot get the work done. So, you know, I like talking about this stuff because it helps me get going. That's also why I like teaching, because if I can help other people, then it can help me keep it moving.
For me, it has been... This is going to sound kind of weird. Well, maybe it's not weird. Maybe this is very normal. I learn more when I teach. It's just, and maybe that's even cliche. I feel like that's super cliche, but I'm going to say it anyway because it's true. For me, I love feeling useful and knowing that I can help people. Like that's a really, really good, rich feeling for me. I love diving into a topic and explaining it in such a way that I'm actually like realizing things and learning things as I'm explaining it. It's sort of like processing or journaling for me in a way. So that's been just incredibly amazing. I love seeing other people's passion for their projects, and I love just sort of watching them come alive. That is just really, really cool. I love seeing when I talk with a new student, I love seeing in their eyes, like, yeah, this is my thing. And this is how I'm going to make my mark on the world. And it's like, yeah, you are. I love it. Like, so I get energized by seeing other people really be in love with their work. And I get to learn while I teach, and that is also something that's really invigorating for me. So I don't know, it's been really unexpected, but really, really delightful.
When you teach, do you have like a set syllabus that you made where it's like, I lead them through these like, you know, 15 exercises and it gives them a journey? Or is it like person by person, you deal with them individually and then give them sort of their own exercises and assistance as needed?
It's both. So I have my, I think it's like 9 different segments of the syllabus that I walk people through, but I also do just a lot of one-on-one coaching with students. And so anything that they're struggling with, a lot of people will go through the syllabus, but they'll have hangups about things, or they'll have fears that they need to work through, or they'll need to have like a mindset shift. And so I'll kind of talk them through that and ask them questions and sort of challenge them through that so that then they can get back into the coursework and sort of create freely from there. That's a really good question. I've never thought about that before.
Well, I like to think about it because I teach improv and sketch, and I have different ways of teaching based on like the length of time that I have. So like when I'm teaching improv, I'm usually teaching a syllabus that's been given to me by a school. So it's like they have their specific lesson that they want to have happen week to week for their school. And so I teach that, and I enjoy that kind of thing because for me, I'm saying the same thing over and over, but I, as the instrument of that, I'm going through so many different things each time. So every time I teach it, I have a different focus because it's just like whatever the thing is that I'm thinking about in my own creative stuff. So like if I'm in the middle of creating characters with my own projects, then when I'm teaching, a lot of what I'm teaching will lean towards character-based stuff and character-based examples. And like, you know, if I watch a sketch show on television, I start using all of those, I'll send those videos to the students as examples. Like this shows this thing that we were talking about in class, this is shown in this sketch, stuff like that. Whereas when I do a longer session that I'm more sort of in control of, whether it's like a multiple day improv intensive or a multiple week sketch comedy writing situation, then I, you know, I can give a little bit more leeway. And also I'm aware of the ups and downs. Like with a camp that's 2 weeks, there's a couple of days that I just write off as like, we're never going to get work done. Like that Friday, forget about it. Like just games. Yeah. It's just games all day because it is a waste of trying to get work done in that situation. In the same way, but that's because they're like preparing to take a break. In the same way that when I teach like a 5-day improv intensive on Wednesday, the students are done. They're like over it. They're a lot. That's generally when we get the crankiness from people, when they're like, yeah, I know that's what I did. And you're like, cool, I'm just giving you the note. And that's fine. And I'll tell them that up top where it's like, you're going to go through a journey. I know what that journey is. Just be cool with whatever happens. I'm cool with it. I know that stuff's going to happen. You're going to be happy. You're going to be sad. There are going to be times when you're into it. There are going to be times that you're fighting it. Just keep going. Just keep going till the end, you know? So I always think about it that way, you know, it's my journey too. Like you said, you learn the most when you teach. I think that teaching is my own learning. You know, I'm either learning how to re-communicate the same lessons, or I'm learning how to help this crowd of people navigate creating something together.
Yeah. Mm. And I love that you understand the journey so well and the emotional impact and the different beats that come along with that journey. I love that.
That's also why I find I forgive myself for stuff. Like, I promised myself I wouldn't do this because you're like legit and famous and stuff. And I was like, don't tell her about your theory. But every single episode of this podcast, if there are regular listeners, guys, strap in. I'm about to tell her about my theory of life. I say it every single time. So here it is. Because it makes sense right now for our conversation. So I think that we all have become new people every 18 years. I think once every 18 years, we have an 18-year journey from the beginning of sort of like birth to accomplishing a goal. And that goal is usually becoming something, like becoming a person in our own right. So 0 to 18, but there's all these specific factors that go in there. So 0 to 18, we're our parents' kid. We do what our parents tell us. We live where they tell us to live. We do what they tell us to do, and we pretty much just sort of live based on their rules, right? We're unaware until late in the game that there are other rules other than these rules. We just have to live under these rules for a while, and we're just like, man, do we rebel? Yeah. Are we happy all the time? No. Do we learn stuff? Absolutely. Do we always know we learn stuff? No. Ooh. By the time we're 18, we're not the same person that we were at 0, of course. And we're also not the same person that we were at 9, right? Halfway through. So then you are 18. You go out into the world to live your life. From 18 to 36, you are new you. You're adult you. Mm. You're figuring it out. You figure out how to do things like pay rent and not get evicted. You figure out how to move yourself in a car. You figure out how to like go to take classes or develop a skill, and you keep a job probably for a couple of years. Like you go through all the things you go through. Usually between 18 and 36, people will get married and divorced or have a drug addiction and be better. Or, you know, decide to be a lawyer for 6 years and then go, you know what? I don't want to do that. I'm going to be a poet and I'm going to live in, you know, Poland. Like what? But people have their whole journey, and 36-year-olds are not who they were when they were 18, right? No. Absolutely not. And they're certainly not who they were at 27, right?
Yeah.
Which, P.S., is a seminal age that everyone gets all like itchy about, 27. But you'll notice it's in the middle of this journey. Because in the middle of the journey, you're like, who am I? What's going on? When you're 9 years old, you are the most sort of woke to life than you've ever been in your whole life. It's like at 9 years old, you really get it. Someone tells you, like, I think, and I don't know, and I'll tell you later when I actually have a child who's 9, but I think it's right around that age when they like get all of it. Like, it's not like get okay, I get it that we're human beings and that we're, okay, I get evolution and how that works and stuff like that. And then it's like, and then people die and animals die. And then it's like, and you die. And it's like, wait, what? Whoa. Because there's a moment in everyone's life when they sort of grasp mortality. And then every day after that, that's just like a thing that they know. But it's sort of like 9-ish, 10-ish when you kind of like truly grasp it. Like the moment when I saw in my baby's eyes that he wasn't just a lump on a log and he was like looking around the room at like real things. I was like, oh, there he is. Like, yeah. You know, your brain just finds different points. Anyway, next journey, 36 to 54. 36 to 54 is a wild time. They don't tell you what to do then. Nobody's like, the no. Cool times of 36 to 54. Nobody's like, check out this awesome calendar filled with gorgeous people in their 40s and early 50s. Never do you see these kinds of things, right? There's no one like amazing. Like the other day, like literally 2 days ago, there was a tweet. This is going to like establish when we recorded this. Like 2 days ago, there was a tweet that was like, I don't want to see any of those like best 20 entrepreneurs under 20. I want to see people in their 40s, 50s, and 60s in middle age, like doing great things and having wonderful lives. And then everybody, like Twitter exploded and everyone gave a response like, I'm 46 and I just did this. I'm 42 and I just did this. And it was amazing. And it like proves my point that 36 to 54 is a new renaissance of a new person. And 36 to 54, you still need to give yourself the break you give yourself when you're 18. I mean, I know that 18-year-olds are super serious and they're all like, oh my God, I figured it out. Ugh. But like 22 or something, you're like, guys, no, I didn't figure it out. And then you kind of, you know, climb up the walls and fall down the stairs until you turn 36. And one hopes by 36, you're at least like, okay, I can do this sort of. Like, I can figure this out. I mean, one hopes. And perhaps, again, this is my like privileged point of view. But I just feel like you go through a lot. You learn new things. You're an adult at that point. And we get a few more of them, 36 to 54, 54 to 72. If we're lucky, we get another one after that. But if we just get to 72, that means that you can be four different people, and not even can be, will be. The person who was 18 is not the same person that was 54. The point of view is different. The way they solve problems is different. The way they see the world is different. Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
Oh my gosh.
And all I'm saying is you need to forgive yourself the journey. We don't give ourselves the time to grow and become who we need to be and just be cool with it. Like if you're 27 right now and you're listening to this, like be cool. You're going to figure it out. It's going to be fine. And every bit of it's just like an ebb and a flow, you know? Like I'm in my early 40s. Do I know what I'm doing? No, I don't. But I'm cool with it because I'm like, it's fine. By 54, I'll be solid. So I'm just going to keep learning, finding new information and getting new creativity and like embracing my new point of view on the world. Like I didn't know I was a Generation X until somebody told me. Great. What does that mean? And now I know.
I love it. I love this. I was taking notes while you were talking.
Oh, great. Oh man, I really want to write a book about it, but I don't think it's actually based on anything at all. Like I don't think it's based on I did do a small amount of research to find out that like lunar cycles go in 18 years, but then it would just be like one group of people would be affected by the 18 year thing, but maybe not. I mean, I guess the moon's wherever it is when you're born, and then right. In 18 years, it'll be back in that spot. So that's your journey. But I don't know.
I feel like you need to do a TED talk on this.
God, please give me your TED Talk connects. I'll do a TED Talk on anything. We used to do a show. Where it was improvised TED Talks, and people they would make just slides behind you, random slides, and you had to, and they like somebody gave you a suggestion, and between the suggestion and what you saw on the slides, you had to just talk for, you know, 10 minutes. It was great. I love that.
That sounds amazing.
That's my favorite. I'll do that any day. So, final question. Thank you so much, by the way, for giving me so much of your time. If you had any advice for people who were trying to get started into writing or into podcasting, something that could spur them on or get them out of their shell to get moving, what would that be?
Oh, gosh. There's just so many like little pieces of advice that kind of come together. Like, you have to read a lot. You have to like make sure that you're on a steady diet of like good creativity if you're going to produce good creative stuff. I create a lot of things out of spite.
What does that mean?
Because I was so used to people telling me no. So I graduated college during the recession, and everybody was pretty much like, we don't want or need you. And I'm like, fine, I'm going to get a job working for a software company, and I'm going to create stuff in my spare time, and you can shove it. And so I'm so used to, I've sort of been trained to stop asking for permission, which I kind of appreciate. One of the things I tell my students is make them tell you no. And then when they tell you no, do it anyway. Just do it out of total spite, in spite of people telling you you can't do it or you shouldn't do it. You got to write anyway.
But what if it's yourself saying no? It's not someone on the outside. Yeah. It's just yourself being like, no.
If it's yourself saying no, maybe it's for a reason. I'd encourage you to think about it and journal about it. But again, if it's fear, I don't know. Fear is such an interesting thing. I don't really think we can get rid of fear. I don't think we can punch fear in the face or whatever people tell us to do. I think that you kind of need to just like learn how to hold hands with fear and get along like two kids on a playground. Mm. work through those issues together. I feel like this is the most sloppy, disastrous advice ever because it's like 9 different things. But
no. I'm picking it apart as you're going through. It's not.
Oh, good. Okay, good, good. You know. Make me sound smart in the final cut of this.
Oh no. I don't mean I'm cutting it. I mean like while you're telling me these things, I'm also asking you questions about them. You have like 9 parts, but on your third part, I'm like, tell me more about that. So no one faults you for being thrown off, you know, because I'm the one throwing you off. In fact, I'm going to continue to throw you off because you said that you create out of spite and that you're always fighting against someone who's saying no to you. But these days, people love you. You're, you know, a crowd favorite. What do you do now that you're getting yeses? If people are like, yes, great idea, do you immediately go like, no, that must clearly be a bad idea because they don't hate it?
No, I just don't tell anyone what I'm doing. So I'll make something and then I'll be like, here, I made this thing. And I'll have created it. Nobody tells me yes. And I don't know. I don't know if that's something I'm like doing subconsciously for that exact reason. But yeah, no, it hasn't stopped me yet.
It sounds like I feel kindred spirit with you because I feel like for you, it's not about like how to get started. It's about like I have so many things in my head to get out that, mm-hmm. you know, like I'm just going to keep doing it. And if it turns into a success somehow, super. Otherwise, I'm just going to have a few folders on my computer with novels and screenplays projects and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. I have files. I have drawers full. I have in my closet, I have this giant plastic sack that is like full of printed out manuscripts. And oh, yeah, it's all here. Like when I die one day, like somebody's going to go through all of my stuff and be like, she was an insane person.
I always hope for my biographer as well. I always hope like someday they'll write a book about me. It occurred to me that really I should probably just write the book.
Instead of having somebody do it posthumously for you, I think that's a fantastic idea. Write your book.
It's like the amazing story of Amy Jordan. And it's like, she's not dead. What is this book about? What's going on? She lived a great life. It's like, wait a minute. She lives right there. What is this book?
Please do this. I want this. I want this to exist.
Oh man, I want this to exist. Lord knows how I would put that together. I was just thinking we're moving soon, and I was like, do I need that box of notebooks that no one's ever going to read ever? Maybe I should just burn them in some sort of sacrificial, like, you know, funeral pyre to old ideas. It's like, ah, yes, my old journey and your thoughts. Goodbye, thoughts. Now I am in the new place. I mean, because to a certain extent, like, the way that I even created when I was younger is different. Do you find that now? I mean, do you have a different style now that you've been doing it and that you have found a way to accomplish the task versus when you first started and you were like, maybe I'll try this, maybe I'll try that?
Yes. 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 It is very different. Like I said, I started Girl in Space as an experiment. And so I just wrote the first episode and I produced it and released it to the world and was all prepared to like go start something different when I realized people were listening to it and I should probably make a second episode. And so like every episode I had to make like just in time, like on the spot, with no planning. It was sort of like outrunning an avalanche made of dinosaurs. It was just like constant panic. And so for season two, I'm actually going to outline and plan it. And I think it'll be, a little bit better, or I hope it will. I don't know. And I'm even thinking back to like, I wrote this massive novel when I was in seventh grade and it was just complete unself-aware creation. Like I was just writing out these fantasies that I had in my head without understanding what it would mean for an audience to read them or to even try to make sense of them. And so like, I think, you know, as I've gotten more increasingly self-aware as an adult, like I now think about, oh, will people enjoy this? What's the most interesting thing that can happen next? How am I keeping my audience in mind and entertaining them throughout this? And what are they going to expect and want from this character? And how can I subvert that? It's almost become, instead of just like a monologue into the void, it is now almost a conversation with my potential reader slash listener about with setting expectations, living up to those expectations and subverting them. Like that's almost become a game that I play now when I write. So I don't know. That's been fun to sort of grow into that too.
It's interesting thinking about how we change and how we develop as artists. And like I said, you know, it sounds to me like you're the kind of person who's not like, oh, I need to figure out how to get this done. But really like, I have so many ideas. Which one do I pick right at this moment?
Well, and of course, my brain's like all of them at once.
Yeah. Well, you can probably figure out how to do that. I mean, find a way to just make them all, you know.
How many staircases do I want to throw myself down consecutively?
You mentioned like wanting to write to make your audience, you know, what things I could do to make the audience like this. Do you think considering what the audience wants from your work takes away from your own creative license, or does it just give you a constraint that like helps you make a final decision?
Yeah, kind of the latter. It just gives me something to play with. Like limitations are well, and you probably know this even better than I do from improv, how limitations and like weird random expectation setting can like make the story even more creative or make your product even more interesting. And because I think that creativity can feed off of different things. And sometimes when you're just sitting in that sandbox, like you're like, hey, somebody like throw me a shovel or a bucket or something. I need some kind of constraint. And my reader and listener expectations are often sort of that tool that I use to, I don't know, beget more creativity or to solve problems in a unique way. For me, it just makes it more fun, which hopefully is what this is all about.
Do people give you suggestions? Like, I don't mean direct suggestions like, hey, you should do this, but are they like, hey, well, maybe they do just directly give you suggestions where it's like,
oh, they do.
Hey, I wish this would happen. Or like, is she going to do this? And then you're like, well, I guess she could. But
Not anymore.
I hadn't thought about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you wrote it on Twitter, so no. No. Was there anything else that you wanted to share?
I think that's it. I mean, I'll probably think of like 9 more things that are actually like better, you know, tonight at 3 a.m. But
good stay.
No, I think for now I'm good. Yeah. I hope this has been helpful. I mean, you've been an absolute delight.
Oh, you're very sweet. I appreciate that. I feel great about it. I feel like people who are out there trying to figure out how to get the writing done, and, you know, especially people who are like me in their early 40s trying to like get back on the horse again. Like, I feel like a lot of the stuff that we've talked about has been very helpful for the subset of people that are similar to me in that way. And
excellent.
I hope that everyone who is a fan of yours that catches this can be inspired to know that, you know, no matter what's going on, whether it's, you know, you feel inspired or you don't, as long as you just keep trucking along and putting the ideas that you have in your head out on paper, that something will excite you and you'll find a way to make a project that makes you feel good. And, you know, maybe it makes you make money, but usually it's probably better if it just makes you feel good.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. That's so perfect.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. This has been an absolute delight. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you again.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.